Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and now we're on the line with an MU professor who, with a team of fellow researchers, is studying a plant called Sutherlandia. It's native to South Africa, where it's been used to treat infections for a long time. And now there's some question about whether it might have potential as a treatment for patients with HIV/AIDS. Bill Folt, good morning.
Good morning, Gina.
When did Sutherlandia first capture your attention?
Oh, a dozen years or so ago, when we began to seek, plants that are used traditionally in healthcare in South Africa for research that would be funded by the National Institutes of Health, the United States National Institutes of Health.
What was it about the way either that Sutherlandia was being used by the people in places where it grew or otherwise that made you curious?
Well, we were looking for prominent plants that were widely used, and this was at a time when the government of South Africa was promoting use of traditional medicines over the use of the proven antiretrovirals, and that was why our National Institutes of Health were particularly interested in promoting research on the safety and efficacy of some of the plants that are used in South Africa to try to ascertain whether, in fact, the claims that were being made for them could be substantiated by hard science. And Sutherlandia stood out as one of the most prominent of plants being used in South Africa at that time, and I think that it continues to be used, although the antiretrovirals that have been developed that are so powerful have now been rolled out and are being used much more widely than they were a dozen years or so ago.
What are the claims that you were researching specifically?
Most of the claims for Sutherlandia are about its ability to modulate the immune system and to improve the quality of life. With respect to some of the symptoms that are experienced by people that are infected by HIV, particular claims were that it could improve appetite. Frequently, many individuals experience a loss of appetite and wasting, but also stimulating the immune system and helping individuals combat infection.
Where are you in the process of evaluating, like through clinical studies, how HIV patients are being treated with Sutherlandia in South Africa and what the results are?
So with a team of scientists, and I should make sure that the proper credit is given to a number of scientists in Kansas City who are faculty at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, because they led the U.S. part of the clinical trials that were conducted in South Africa, and that was specifically Dr. Kathy Gogan, Dr. Karen Williams, Dr. Mary Gurkovich. We and collaborators in South Africa, physicians, scientists, and also traditional healers that use the medicines, the plant-based medicines, and care for many, many of the individuals in South Africa that are infected, conducted several clinical trials, one a small trial in healthy adults, to ascertain the safety of this plant-based medicine, and then a second trial, a larger trial, in individuals that were infected by HIV and at an early stage in their disease before they really lost their immune system capability to resist other infections. And so we've finished those trials and have published the results, and some of the results were surprising to us, and so we're continuing to pursue trying to explain what the puzzling results have revealed.
What was puzzling? What were the surprising results?
Well, the not so surprising result first is that for most individuals, Sutherlandia is probably safe, at least in the individuals that we studied. The majority of them seem to tolerate Sutherlandia well, and the trials were not powered to be able to really measure efficacy. We were really focusing upon safety. However, to our surprise, several individuals who were taking the Sutherlandia, and most of the individuals that are in that area of South Africa have latent tuberculosis. That's a very, very common problem with the vast majority of individuals throughout the world. In fact, approximately a third of peoples in the world are latently infected with tuberculosis. But what surprised us was that several individuals that were consuming Sutherlandia in this clinical trial developed active tuberculosis, despite receiving the common prophylactic treatment to prevent development of active tuberculosis. And that was in contrast to the individuals who were receiving a placebo, and none of them developed active tuberculosis. So although the numbers are small, actually the result was statistically significant, and it prompted us to really question how Sutherlandia might interfere with the prophylactic treatment that is intended to prevent active tuberculosis. And we've developed a hypothesis that we're presently testing in cell culture and in experimental animals. And I think there's good reason to believe that not only Sutherlandia, but perhaps other botanicals may also interfere with this treatment and should become a advisory to public health providers across the world, because many, many people use botanicals to try to treat infections. And the concern is that they might be using botanicals while they're also taking drugs that are known to actively interfere with infections, and they may compromise each other.
That brings me to this question about sort of what I think of as sometimes a polarizing relationship between traditional remedies, herbal remedies, and modern medicine. I mean, it can even be kind of, at least here in the United States, it seems kind of an identity thing, being either the kind of person who, quote, believes in herbal remedies, or the kind of person who has more faith in Western science. As a scientist who studies traditional medicines, how do you understand the relationship between the two?
Well, there's very good evidence, actually, that the majority of Americans consume alternative treatments or use alternative treatments, not just consume them, but use alternative treatments. So I think while we would like to believe that everybody is rational and makes choices based upon evidence, the fact is that most humans are not particularly rational and will make choices based upon what they hear from others or their gut feeling or who knows what. And I've had, for instance, very scholarly physicians come to me and ask about our research on traditional medicines, and then admit that they actually have taken complementary medicines, dietary supplements for years, and they will continue to do so, even though there's very little evidence for most dietary supplements actually having benefit. So I think that there is a side of human nature that wants the more natural products, and we have to admit to that. But what is really important is to understand that some of these natural products may not be safe, while others may be safe, but not when used in combination with drugs. And I think the best thing is just really to be open with your physician and explain what you are taking, and have your physician assist you in making decisions as to then whether or not you should be taking alternative medicines, and also whether they might conflict with the treatments that the physician is prescribing.
In that case, I mean, is it important for the scientific community to study alternative medicines in order to be able to answer those questions?
Absolutely. And in fact, part of our the mission of the National Institutes of Health, the one center which is been charged to study such medicines and treatments, was the center that funded our studies in South Africa. It used to be called the National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine, but recently it's had its name changed to National Center for Integrative Health, Complementary and Integrative Health. But it clearly is, I think, a very important part of the mission of the National Institutes of Health, because, as I said, many Americans, many of the public all over the world use these complementary medicines, and that's really they're very frequently the basis of the Western medicines which we are presently using, and there's hope that we'll be able to develop additional medicines whose properties we fully understand by studying these complementary medicines that are extremely complex and have been used for centuries.
When you say that traditional remedies or botanical remedies are often the basis for Western medicines that we use today, can you give an example of that?
Sure. Actually, one of the more widely used medicines in the treatment of malaria, which is a huge problem worldwide, is a product that was first isolated from a plant that was widely recognized in China for millennia as having the ability to combat fevers. And Chinese scientists chemically characterized this compound in cooperation with others, developed clinical trials that proved the efficacy of this plant botanical. And in fact, the Nobel Prize in Physiology and Medicine this past year was awarded part of the Nobel Prize in Physiology and Medicine was awarded to the individual that helped lead that team. But there are a number of other examples. Aspirin, widely used by almost everyone in the world to treat fevers and headaches, was originally isolated from the bark of willow trees. And so we really have many medicines. There are a number of cancer drugs that were isolated from plants, and they provide good examples of where to go to find new leads.
Bill, just very quickly, does it matter comparatively how these medicines are administered in their cultures, or is it just scientifically it works or it doesn't?
Oh, it matters very much, and that's a huge part of the use of the traditional medicines.
Well, we will have to talk to you about that aspect some other time, because our time for today's show is up. But Bill Folk, thanks for joining us from the University of Missouri. Best of luck in your research.
Thank you very much, Gina. Enjoyed talking with you.
To listen back to either of today's discussions, go to kcur.org/centralstandard later this afternoon. Sign up for our podcast while you're there. It's really easy, and then you'll get all the content we explore sent right to your phone or other device, no matter what you are busy doing at 10 a.m. That's kcur.org/centralstandard. Tomorrow, tune in to meet the front woman of the popular local band, Your Friend. She'll be giving a special acoustic performance in studio during her visit. If you're a fan, you won't want to miss it. Plus, Kansas City's film community says a fond farewell to Fred Andrews. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stick around for Up to Date next.